as his legs turned loose, and he flipped backward, hitting the ground upside down as the bull dropped down and bounded away. Zek shouted, "You done good, Papa! You was really riding him till he run under that limb!" Tobias got up and examined himself to see if anything was broken. He said, "I wasn't trying to ride him, I was trying to throw him. What we need is a rope. When I get one on the ground, you can tie his legs. Then he can't get up before we put the mark on. Next time we'll bring rope." Zek was awed by his father's performance. He said again, "You done real good, Papa. You had that bull going some before he knocked you off. Hadn't been for that limb, you could have rode him slam back to the house. We going to try it again?" "Maybe tomorrow. I'm a mite sore just now. But there's got to be a way if we can figure it out." It was early morning, a month later, when Zek ran into the clearing, shouting, "Come quick, Papa, hurry, down to the cow pen!" Tobias rushed outside and followed the fleeing boy, having to run full stride to catch up with him. When they reached the pen, Zek shouted, "Look there, Papa, look!" Inside the pen, there was a small black stallion, its sleek body glistening with muscles. On its back was mounted a McClellan saddle. Tied to the outside of the fence, there were two dogs, both tall, gray, and shaggy, looking almost exactly like wolves. Zek jumped up and down with excitement. "Where'd they come from, Papa? Who brought them here?" "Can't say," Tobias said. "But that horse didn't put himself in there, that's for sure. But I think I know. He's a marsh tacky." Zek ran into the pen and leaped onto the saddle. He whirled the horse around and around, shouting, "Look here, Papa, it can turn quicker than a rabbit." Then he kicked it in the side, bounded the fence in one leap, and made a wide circle through the woods. When he came back to the pen, Zek jumped off and said, "He flies like a bird, Papa. We'll get cows now. Ain't no cow can outrun him, even in the swamp. He needs a name. What are we going to call him?" Tobias thought for a moment, and then he said, "Ishmael. We'll call him Ishmael. That's a good name for a horse." "What about the dogs?" Zek then asked. "What are we going to name them? A dog's got to have a name when you call him." "We'll name one after old Tuck. And the other, Nip. Nip and Tuck, how's that?" "That's fine, that's real fine." Zek went over and patted one of the dogs on the head, causing its tail to wag vigorously. He said, "You're Nip, and you're Tuck. I bet you can keep them wild hogs out of the garden." "I expect they will," Tobias said. "They look like they could take on a bear. But I swear they could pass for wolves."
"They ain't, Papa. They's good dogs, I can tell."
"We best go on back to the house now and tell your mama about this. You scared the life out of her when you come running into the clearing shouting like you was. She don't know what the ruckus was about. We best go tell her so she won't worry." Zek untied the dogs, jumped back on the horse, and bounded away. The dogs took after him, barking loudly. Tobias said, "If that sight don't put Emma up a tree, nothing will." When Tobias reached the clearing, Emma was outside, looking at the horse. The dogs were circling her, their tails wagging. She said, "What is all this, Tobias? Has someone lost their horse and dogs?"
"Well, it looks like Christmas done finally come for us. Let's go inside and talk about it."
Zek galloped away as they went into the cabin and sat at the table. Tobias said, "The Indians brung them. It couldn't be nobody else."
"Why? Why would they do this? They owe us nothing."
"They think they do, for what we did for them in the scrub. And it could be they just wanted to do it. Whatever the reason, it's a blessing. I could have never bought that horse and them dogs. Not in 100 years. There ain't that many coons in the swamp."
"Are they wild, the horse and the dogs?"
"Don't seem to be. They're probably trained real good. Keith Tiger told me his people had great herds of cattle before the soldiers took them away, and the horse they used was the marsh tacky. They've probably been keeping some of them horses and dogs all this time, hoping that someday they would have cattle again and be able to use them. But that ain't likely to happen, at least not any time soon. I guess they wanted somebody to put the horse and the dogs to use again."
"First the flower, now this," Emma said. "I wish they would have come to the house. We could have given them something to eat and thanked them."
"I would have liked to see them, too. Maybe they just didn't want to make a big deal out of it. It could be the Indian way."
"I still wish we could have thanked them. I know this means a lot to you and Zek.
Emma, Tobias said, putting his hand on hers, it means more than you know. At least we got a chance now. Before this, we didn't have no chance at all. We were just fooling ourselves, me and Zek, and I knowed it. I just didn't have the heart to tell him. But now, we got a chance.
Chapter 11. The two dogs ran straight to the bull, as if they knew beforehand exactly where they would find it. Nip rushed in and grabbed it by the nose, and Tuck sank his teeth into its left rear leg. Zek was riding just behind them, the small horse darting effortlessly around trees and jumping over vines. Tobias followed on the other horse. When the bull tried to break free, Nip sank his teeth in deeper, causing a trickle of blood to stain the tip of his nose. Then the bull stood motionless, its eyes wild and staring downward at the dog. Tobias jumped from his horse and grabbed the bull by its horns, putting all his strength into a twisting motion that finally sent the bull sprawling on its side. As Zek tied its legs together, the dogs turned loose and backed away. Tobias started a fire, and when the flames were burning brightly, he put the branding iron into the center. He said, "It seems to me we're still doing this wrong. Running around all over the woods and making a fire every time we put on a mark. We ought to build a pen down here and wait till we get 5 or 6 cows in a bunch, then brand them all at one time."
"It do make sense," Zek replied,
"and I bet you that Nip and Tuck could bring in cows by themselves, without no help at all from us. I already seen them do it. They can make a cow go any way they want to. All we'd have to do is show them the pen and say, 'Get 'em.'
We'll start a pen tomorrow. Fact is, we'll build 2, and put them about a mile apart. That ought to be even better."
"I can bring them in by myself, too, Papa. The other day Ishmael made a cow walk a straight line right through the brush. Seemed he knowed every move that cow was going to make, and then he made it first. I think he's part cow himself. He sure knows what a cow is going to do."
When the iron glowed red, Tobias took it from the fire and pressed it to the bull's side. Smoke boiled upward from burning hair as the iron seared the letters MCI into the bull's hide. He kicked twice and tried to get up, then Tobias released the ropes. The bull struggled to its feet and ran off into the woods. The dogs watched attentively, awaiting a signal for them to hunt again. Then Tobias patted one on the head and said, "Go get 'em, dogs, get 'em." They immediately streaked away into the brush. Zek said,
"Them dogs is a sight, ain't they, Papa?"
"They surely are. I don't know how we ever got along without 'em. They keep this up, there's going to be McIver cows all over the place. You best put out that fire now, and do it real good. Seems like a fool idea to be running around building fires all over the swamp."
The sound of yelping came from a half mile away, and Zek said, "They done struck another one already."
"Sure sounds like it. They don't even give us a chance to rest. Let's ride on over and see to it."
This time they did not race the horses, knowing that the dogs would hold the cow even to sundown if necessary. When they reached the spot, the dogs were running around and around a thick clump of palmetto, barking and growling at the same time. Tobias watched for a moment, and then he said,
"That sure ain't no cow they've got in there this time. Don't go in yet. It could be a bear in them bushes."
The dogs continued circling and growling, and Tobias took the rifle from the saddle holster. He said,
"Whatever it is, it sure don't want to come out. Must be something besides a bear, else the horses would have done smelled him by now and put on a show. Ain't no horses nowhere is going to stand still for a bear, not even Ishmael."
For 5 minutes, the dogs continued circling the palmetto. Then Tobias said,
"We're going to have to flush it out, whatever it is. Get a big stick and throw in there. I'll keep the gun aimed."
Zek dismounted and picked up a hickory limb. Tobias said to him,
"Don't go any closer. Throw it from as far back as you can."
Zek whirled around and around, then he released the limb. It arched upward and crashed down right into the center of the palmetto clump. Nothing happened for a moment more, and then they heard a rustling sound as if something were crawling. Then a black head peeked through a frond. The Negro crawled forward slowly, watching the dogs, his eyes pure terror. He glanced upward and saw the rifle pointing at him, and then he said,
"Don't shoot me, mister. and call off them critters. I don't mean no harm."
His voice trembled as he spoke. Tobias and Zek were both so surprised, they did nothing but stare. Finally, Tobias said,
"Get the dogs away from him, Zek. Make them hush up."
Zek called the dogs to him and held them as Tobias dismounted, the rifle still in his hand. He said,
"Fella, what the hell you doing hiding in there? I could have shot in there blind and killed you."
"The dogs," the Negro said, his voice still shaky. "They got to me before I could go up a tree, and there wasn't nowhere else for me to go. I thought they was wolves."
"They do favor a mite," Tobias said, "but they won't hurt you now. You can come out of there. We don't aim to do you any harm."
When the Negro stood up, he was even taller than Tobias, at least 6.5 feet, and his forearm was as large as Tobias's thigh. He was dressed in a tattered blue shirt and had on a pair of pants that seemed to have been made from a feed sack. He appeared to be about the same age as Tobias, and he was the blackest Negro Tobias had ever seen. When he spoke, his white teeth gleamed like elephant ivory. He said,
"You ain't got a little scrap of food, has you? I ain't et since day before yesterday."
"Don't have nothing here," Tobias said, "but there's victuals back at the house. We'll be glad to feed you."
"Where'd you come from, anyway?"
"Just to the south of Tallahassee."
"Tallahassee?" Tobias repeated. "You mean you walked slam down here from Tallahassee?"
"Sure did. I've been drifting now for nigh on a year. I've been shot at and stomped and chased by dogs, but this the first time I've been treed by wolves."
"They ain't wolves," Zek said, listening curiously. "They's dogs."
"Well, you could have fooled me. I would have swore for God they was wolves."
Tobias said, "I'm Tobias McIvy, and this is my boy Zek. Who be you?"
"Skillet."
"Your name's Skillet?"
"That's all I ever been knowed as. Skillet."
"Well, Skillet, I sure would like to hear what you've got to say for yourself. But I know you're about to starve, so let's go to the house and see to your belly first. We'll talk later."
"That would sure be fine, but just don't let them wolves get to me."
"They ain't wolves," Zek said again. "They's dogs. Their names are Nip and Tuck, and they can catch any cow you ever seen."
"I just bet they can," Skillet said, "and any nigger, too."
Tobias watched the Negro as he wolfed down the bowl of stewed squash and then chomped a fried coon leg, bone and all. Emma watched, too, thinking that he was about the hungriest man she had ever seen. She said, "Would you like more squash? That's the last piece of coon meat till I cook some more."
"I sure would, missus. I'd be right proud to add another bowl. You be a fine cook, a fine one."
Tobias said, "Soon as I get a smokehouse built, I aim to shoot a cow. Fresh meat wouldn't keep no time at all in this heat. We'll have beef soon as I'm done with the smokehouse."
"I ain't never ate a smoked cow," Skillet said, stuffing his mouth with squash. "Only hog, and not much of that, sow belly mostly."
"It's right good," Tobias said. "I smoked one once before when we lived up in the scrub." Zek said, "You ride a horse? I bet you ain't never seen a horse like Ishmael. He's a marsh tacky."
"I've rid plenty of them," Skillet said, "and mules, too. When I was a boy, I used to ride a goat. Turn your back on him, he'd knock you over a fence."
Zek was fascinated by the black man. He said,
"You been a slave?" "Zek," Emma snapped, "why you ask him a question like that?"
"It's all right, missus. I been that, too. I was born on a plantation in Georgia. My daddy and my granddaddy were slaves. When I was 4 years old, I was sold to a man at Tallahassee. He went to the farm there. I guess I'd still be a slave hadn't been for the war."
"What happened to you after the war?" Tobias asked.
"When the war ended, they said all us niggers was free, and we could do whatever we wanted. Some folks went up north, and some stayed where they was. I cleaned me a little piece of land and built me a cabin on it. And then I started a farm. Had a fine garden. Wasn't long after that some men come to the house one night. Said they didn't want no nigger building a house or running a farm. They was all dressed in white sheets and had hoods over their faces. I told them I was supposed to be free, and I didn't see how a garden could hurt nobody. They raw-hided me good. Whooped me like I ain't never been whooped before. Then they tromped down my garden with their horses and set fire to the cabin. Ever since then, I've been drifting south, sleeping wherever I could and stealing chickens when I could find one. I guess someday I got to find me a place and stop.
They whup you with a whip?
Zek asked. They sure did.
We got a whip that kills rabbits and squirrels and coons and rattlers, too. You want to see it?
Zek, Emma said again. He don't want to see no whip. Hush up now, and let Skillet talk. We want to hear.
That's about the end of it, Skillet said. I guess I should have turned north instead of south. There don't seem to be nothing down here but woods and swamps. You the first white folk ever give me a meal.
Where will you go from here? Tobias asked.
Don't know. Don't even know where I'm at now.
So far as I know, there ain't nothing in the far south but swamp and Indians, Tobias said. I've never met a white man who's been there. It was Indians from down there who gave us the marsh tacky and dogs. They were Seminoles.
How come they do that? Skillet asked.
We done them a favor once. I got an idea, Skillet. Why don't you stay on here for a while? You would be a big help to me and Zek. We couldn't pay you nothing, 'cause we ain't got nothing, but we could build you a little cabin to stay in. The garden ought to come in soon, and if you help me with the smokehouse, we'll kill us a cow.
You mean you'd let me stay here?
Skillet asked, not sure he was hearing what Tobias said. What do you say, Emma? Tobias asked.
It's fine with me. He'd be a big help to you and Zek, and it's just as easy to cook for four as three. It won't be no bother at all.
Will you stay? Tobias asked.
I sure will, Skillet said, grinning and flashing the ivory teeth. I's awful tired of drifting. I'm beholden to you, Mr. Tobias, and to you, Mrs. Emma. I never knowed them wolves was doing me such a favor by putting me in them bushes.
They ain't wolves, Zek said. They's dogs.
Then he turned to Tobias and said, Can Skillet ride your horse, Papa? I found an eagle nest down by the river, and I want to show it to him. It's got babies in it. Can he, Papa?
He can ride whenever he wants.
Zek jumped up and said, Come on, Skillet. But you better watch that old big horse. He ain't no marsh tacky. He runs straight, and if you don't watch him, he'll knock you off on a tree. When he reached the door, Skillet turned and said,
Soon's we're back, we'll start on that smokehouse, Mr. Tobias. It won't take us no time at all to build one. No time at all.
Zek grabbed his arm and pulled him out the door, saying, Come on, Skillet, come on. Tobias and Emma were both smiling. Chapter 12. A thin spiral of smoke drifted upward as Tobias put on more wood and placed the branding iron on the fire. Zek and Skillet stood just outside the gate, waiting for the iron to get hot. Inside the pen, six cows milled about, poking their huge horns at the rails, trying to find a weak spot in the fence. Nip and Tuck were lying under a huckleberry bush, panting from the heat. Tobias said, It's ready now, Zek. You do the tying when Skillet gets one on the ground.
Don't need no rope, Skillet said. That just take up more time. You just stand back out of the way, Mr. Zek. Let me handle it.
Skillet was shirtless, and his black skin glistened with sweat. Summer was boring in now with its full fury, and it seemed that even the water of the river was warm. When Tobias came over to the pen, Skillet went inside and grabbed a cow by the horns. In one quick motion, he had it on the ground and was on top of it. Muscles became taut in his arms and back as the bull struggled uselessly. Tobias pushed the branding iron to flesh, then Skillet released it and grabbed another one. In an instant, the cow was on the ground, and the iron made its mark again. Tobias said,
Lordy, Skillet, with you here we can brand as many cows in a half hour as it used to take me and Zek a week. You're the strongest man I ever seen.
It ain't nothing working these little old rundy cows. I'd go down a mule if and I had to.
As soon as the branding was finished, the cows were turned loose. Tobias said,
That's about enough for today. It's too hot to do this. Let's go on back and finish your cabin.
Skillet picked up his shirt and said,
Mr. Tobias, what you gonna ever do with all these cows? You can't eat all of them, not even with someone around with a belly like mine.
Tobias scratched his head.
You know, I ain't never thought of that. Me and Zek stayed so busy trying to catch one and put on a mark, I never put no mind to what I'd do if we did catch it. I've been told that come spring we ought to round them up and let them graze as a herd on the prairie. They sure don't seem to gain no weight in these woods.
After that, I guess we ought to sell them, Summers. They ain't worth a red cent to us roaming the woods, but I don't rightly know where to take them for the selling.
Place where I stayed had a lot of cattle. During the war, they all went to the soldiers, but there sure ain't no Confederate army around no more to buy 'em.
Next time I go to the trading post, I'll ask Elias Thompson. He ought to know.
But they sure don't put nothing in your pocket like this. We need to get us some cash money.
What's that? Skillet asked, grinning. In all my life, I ain't never had even a single coin of my own.
I guess you done noticed these cracker sack britches ain't got no pockets.
You will, Tobias said. We'll just keep on marking like we got good sense. It ain't costing us nothing to brand 'em. They were about halfway to the clearing when a shrill tooting sound came from the direction of the river. Zek stopped his horse and said, "What's that, Papa? I ain't never heard no bull holler like that."
"I'd say it's a steam whistle," Tobias said. "I ain't heard a sound like that since we left Georgia."
"I've heard it before," Skillet said. "Trains up to Tallahassee made that sound when they wanted to run cows off the tracks."
"Well, there ain't no train out there coming through the woods," Tobias said, "so it must be on the river. Elias Thompson told me he heard the boats was going to run the river again down to Okeechobee. That must be one of them. He said they might want to buy stuff for trade. Let's go and see."
The whistle blew again just as they reached the river. Then the boat came into view. It was a sternwheeler, 40 feet long, with black smoke boiling from its one stack. The deck was crowded with crates, and a sign across the wheelhouse said, "Mary Bell." Tobias jumped up and down, waving his arms and shouting as the boat came abreast of them. Then the stern wheel was reversed, sending bubbling brown water rushing beneath the boat and into the bank. The boat stopped slowly, backed up, and turned into the bank. A man came out to the rail and shouted,
"What is it? You want passage down to Okeechobee?"
"No," Tobias answered. "You want to buy something or trade?
What you got?"
"What you want?"
"Damn, fella," the man shouted. "You stop us for a fool question like that? You got something to sell? Say it."
Tobias said, "We got beef."
"What kind?"
"Cows." The man shook his head, exasperated.
"All beef is cows. Are you talking about them wild swamp critters?"
"We catch 'em in the swamp."
"Hell no, I don't want none of the scrawny yellowhammers. They don't even make good soup. You got deer?"
"We could."
"Pay you 3 cents a pound, dressed. But it's got to be fresh killed. If it ain't, you could just feed it to the buzzards. We'll be back by here 3 days from now."
"How about gator hides?" Tobias asked.
"$2 each if they're big enough."
"Coons?
25 cents a hide."
"That the best you can do?"
"Damn."
Just then the whistle shrieked loudly, causing both horses to buck. The man shouted,
"We ain't got all day, you idiot. You got something to sell? Be back here in 3 days."
Then the boat pulled away from the bank and continued downstream.
"Seemed to be a mite riled up, didn't he?"
Tobias said.
"I guess," Skillet said, trying to calm the horse.
"There must be 100 gators in that big pond down by the hickory flat," Tobias said. "We get 'em all. That's more money than I ever seen."
"Could be," Skillet said, "but a gator don't part with his hide easy. Don't count your money yet."
Zek said, "Papa, why don't me and Skillet ride back to the woods and see if we can find deer signs? We'll be back to the clearing real soon."
"While you do that, I'll go on to the house and tell Emma. That whistle probably scared her real good." Tobias watched as Skillet mounted the horse. He said, "You know, Skillet, it's a good thing we got that big old army horse. You get on one of them marsh tackies, your feet would drag the ground."
"That's the God's truth," Skillet said. "That little horse ain't made for a big nigger like me. I'd as soon ride that goat I had when I was a boy."
"We find a deer trail, you want us to put nip and tuck on it?"
Zek asked.
"Nope. You heard the man say it has to be fresh killed. I ain't wasting a bullet on buzzard bait. We'll go after a gator first."
They set out for the pond early the next morning. Tobias and Zek on the horses, and Skillet following, carrying an axe, a 6-foot cypress pole, and a length of rope. Just past the hickory flat, they tied the horses to a bush and walked the remaining distance. Nip and Tuck had been left behind at the house for fear they would strike the scent of a cow and go after it alone. The bank of the pond was covered thickly with button bush and pickerel weed, but on the north side, a mud flat formed an open area that ran 40 feet out into the water. A fallen cypress limb to the left of the flat was covered solidly with turtles,
and to the sound of approaching footsteps, they rolled over sideways and splashed into the water. Six alligators were lying on the flat, motionless, their jaws cocked open. They paid no heed as the two men and a boy came to within 30 feet of them and stopped. If they were even aware of the intruders, they did not show it. Skillet said, "How are we going to go about this, Mr. Tobias? I ain't never even tried to kill a gator."
"Me neither, but it appears they're sleeping. That ought to make it easy."
For a few moments they just looked, and then Tobias said, "We'll try the one nearest to us. Ease in there, Skillet, and bash him on the head with that pole. Then me and Zek will come in and help pull him out."
"Are you sure about this?"
Skillet asked.
"What if he don't bash? He got a mighty hard-looking head to me."
"That pole could knock down a bull. Just give him a good one." Skillet eased forward, and when he stepped out onto the flat, his feet sank down into the mud. He took two more steps forward, each time making a sucking sound with his shoes. Then, suddenly, the alligators started hissing. Skillet looked back and said,
"What I do now? Them things is giving me a warning, like a rattlesnake."
"They ain't even looking at you," Tobias said. "That hissing don't mean nothing. They can't bite you with their heads turned away from you." As Skillet took another step forward, the hissing grew louder. The alligators were sideways to him, still motionless. He pulled one foot from the muck and leaped forward as best he could, lifting the pole above his head. Before he could start the downswing, the nearest alligator whirled around quickly and charged, its massive jaws snapping wildly. The pole came down and hit the alligator on top of its head. Then it bounced away, ricocheting off the fallen cypress tree and landing in the water 10 feet beyond. Skillet fell backward into the mud and rolled over. He struggled free just as the alligator's jaws snapped to within a foot of his face. Then he scrambled up the bank and ran back to Tobias and Zek.
"I told you," he exclaimed excitedly. "I done told you them things don't part with their hides easy. What we gonna do now?"
Three of the alligators pushed off into the water and swam away. One of the remaining ones was still hissing, and the other two became silent again.
"I guess I'll just have to shoot one," Tobias said. "He can't bounce off a bullet like he did that pole."
He took the rifle from its holster and came closer to the flat. "I best hit him halfway up from his tail, around where the heart ought to be. If I hit him in the snout, it probably wouldn't do nothing but make him mad." Tobias aimed carefully and fired. The alligator jumped 2 feet sideways and lay still as the other two scrambled into the water.
"Let's just stay back a minute and see if he moves," Tobias said.
They continued to watch, and then Tobias said, "He's dead for sure. Let's go in and get him, Skillet. Zek, you stay up here out of the way." As they started across the flat, Tobias said, "I'll get the tail and you get his head. The way he's lying, we'll have to pull him out sideways." Skillet had just reached the head when Tobias grabbed the tail and jerked it. The huge tail lashed out like a whip, striking Tobias in the side. He landed 6 feet out in the water and went under. The gator then whirled around, jaws snapping, and caught the bottom of Skillet's pants in its teeth. Skillet kicked frantically, trying to break free, shouting, "Oh, Lordy! Oh, Lordy!" Tobias came up spitting water, and then he managed to shout, "Get the gun, Zek! Shoot him! In the head, Zek! Shoot!" Zek scrambled for the rifle as Skillet's pants were jerked off, making flapping sounds as the gator swished its head from side to side, popping the cloth in the air. Zek aimed quickly and fired and was knocked flat on his back. The alligator pumped blood from a hole directly between the eyes. He bucked up and down for a moment and then became still. Tobias and Skillet scrambled up the bank simultaneously. Skillet said,
"That son of a bitch done tore up my britches, Mr. Tobias. What I gonna do? That the only pair I got."
"Emma can patch 'em," Tobias said, still spitting water. "Don't worry about it. You all right, Zek?"
"I'm okay, Papa. It just knocked the breath out of me."
"You ready to try again?" Tobias said to Skillet. "We done come too far to quit now. Let's get him out and see can we skin out the hide, and we can get your pants out of his mouth."
"I guess," Skillet said, without enthusiasm. "But I tell you the truth, Mr. Tobias, this ain't worth no $2. I'd as soon skin out 8 coons or shoot a buck. I don't want no more truck with them gators."
Might be best we stick with Coombs, Tobias said. I'm a bit shook up myself. Tomorrow morning we'll let them gators be and try to kill us a deer and a few coons.
Chapter 13. Spring, 1867. The holding pen was built just past the edge of the woods, at the point where forest ends and prairie begins. Inside there were 148 cows, all with the MCI brand. Zek put his hand on the gate latch and shouted, "You ready, Papa? Let him go." Zek threw open the gate, and one cow ambled out slowly, then a few others followed and milled about. Others stayed inside, swishing their tails and bobbing their horns. Tobias shouted, "Don't get in front of them, nobody, and don't push. Just let them eat, and we'll follow." Tobias and Zek then mounted their horses. Standing ready to rush after strays, Skillet was on the wagon seat with Emma beside him, and Nip and Tuck were off to the right, looking bewildered, waiting for something to happen. The horse pulling the wagon was tall and black, with rib and hip bones showing beneath its hide. Tobias had been at the Fort Capron trading post when a man from St. Louis came through with a string of 30 ex-army horses. He purchased one for $20, knowing the old nag wasn't worth it, but hoping he could fatten it on prairie grass and bring back some of its strength. He had to have something to pull the wagon on their first summer grazing drive, and this was the best he could do. They worked steadily for months, selling hides and deer meat to the riverboat, and after purchasing the horse, Tobias had enough left for a 3-gallon cast-iron cooking pot, 2 cowhide whips, salt and flour, and a used tarpaulin for the wagon. There still was no Dutch oven. Zek had visions of following a thundering herd across the prairie, cracking his whip constantly, riding wildly as he forced escaping cows back into the herd. But by now a noon sun was directly overhead and the cows were still within 100 yards of the pen, grazing contentedly. The wagon stood ready, but the wheels had not turned even one spoke. Tobias rode up to Skillet and said, "Kind of slow, ain't it?"
"Sure is. But this poor old hoss is glad of it. I'm going to turn him loose now and let him eat. If them cows decides to move, I'll hitch him up again."
Tobias said, "It's best we keep heading south, over to the east, along the coast. There's too much palmetto and rattlers. Them snakes was thick as skeeters last time I was over there."
Emma adjusted her bonnet and said, "There ought to be some shade out here, Summers. The sun is really coming down on me just sitting here like this. There's not even a breeze like back in the hammock."
"You get too tired, go in the wagon and rest. The tarp will keep the sun off.
I tried that, and it's hotter than an oven in there. I wish the cows would do something so we could move about some."
The afternoon drifted by slowly, and by sundown they had moved less than 2 miles. Skillet pulled the wagon to the edge of a cypress stand, unhitched the horse, and started a fire. Then he cut thin poles, gathered palm fronds, and built a lean-to where he and Zek would sleep. Tobias and Emma would share the wagon. Emma made a stew of smoked beef and onions, and she baked sweet potatoes in the edge of the coals. There was still no coffee, but she boiled hot tea from sassafras roots and sweetened it with cane syrup. They ate from tin plates and then sat by the fire, deciding who would stand first watch. Someone would circle the herd all night, changing guard every 4 hours. It was decided that Zek would go first when there was less chance of danger. Skillet said to him,
"Mr. Zek, when you come in tonight, be real careful before you lie down to sleep. And in the morning, look real good before you make a sudden move. I knowed a man who slept one night on the prairie, and the next morning he grabbed a boot and slapped it on without looking first. There was a rattler in the bottom of it. His legs swelled up big as a tree trunk, and he liked to have died. You be real careful. Them snakes sure love to crawl in and sleep with people."
"Lordy, Skillet," Emma exclaimed, her eyes widening. "Can they climb wagon wheels, too?"
"I've seen them go up a tree easy as nothing. You best look in your shoes, too."
Emma shuddered. "I'll sleep with them on."
Tobias said, "Skillet, you're going to spook Emma before we even get started. Let's worry about keeping the cows in a bunch and forget the snakes. If one comes in the wagon, I'll know what to do."
"Yes, sir, Mr. Tobias," Skillet said, grinning, "just like you knows how to hit a gator on the head with a cypress pole."
Tobias laughed, and then he said, Before anybody goes on watch, we ought to work out a signal. If there's trouble and you need help, crack your whip 3 times real fast. 3 cracks and we'll come to you quick as we can. And if the cows break and run for any reason, get out of the way. I've seen what they can do when they stampede. You understand me, Zek?
Yes, Papa. I'll get out of the way, but if they run off in the dark, how are we going to ever find them?
We will. They can hide on the prairie. Just don't do something foolish. It ain't worth it. Nothing happened during Zek's watch, and at 10 o'clock he rode in and was relieved by Skillet. An hour later, the cry of a wolf came from about a mile away. It was answered immediately by Nip and Tuck, and before the sound could spook the cows, the dogs raced around them, nipping legs, forcing them to remain in a circle. Then they stopped and sat alert, waiting anxiously for the cry to come again so they could go after it, but it was heard no more. A full moon bathed the prairie when Tobias rode out to the herd. Cabbage palms stood like silent sentinels in the distance, and cypress stands were dark silhouettes on a sea of yellow. The quiet land seemed awesome, too vast for any man to ever conquer. Animals could survive its hazards, but Tobias wondered if he could. He also wondered if he were being foolish, taking the advice of an Indian he really hardly knew, leaving the relative safety of his hidden hammock, and following cattle into the unknown. But the cows did not grow in the swamp, and even the boatmen didn't want them. Out here there was grass to fatten them and ready them for market, and they would be worth something some day. He did not want to go on forever skinning coons and killing deer and growing just enough vegetables to survive, and this was apparently the only way out of the trap. But what worried him most was Emma. He did not know what hardships lay ahead for her, things he and Zek and Skillet could overcome easily but would be an ordeal for her. Drifting a prairie was not exactly a woman's way of life. But she had to come along, for leaving her alone in the hammock was unthinkable. There was safety in numbers, safety from predators, and from the bands of men, Thompson said, were roaming the countryside. He hoped that this wandering life would be uneventful, but one thing he knew— she would not complain. And no matter what came their way, she would have the strength to face it. They followed the herd southward for a month, sometimes moving several miles in a day, other times not moving at all. The cows grew larger each day, and even their hides took on a sleek luster. Tobias swore he could actually see them put on weight with each mouthful of grass they swallowed. Even the old nag horse seemed to thrive on the rich prairie and grow stronger. Several times they passed within sight of wild herds, some of them 5 times larger than the one they tended, but they did not go after them. Tobias thought it would be too much for the 3 of them to handle. It would take more men and more horses to capture and brand cows in such large numbers, and his mind was already searching for a way to hire drovers to join his little band. One night when they were eating supper, Zek said, "Papa, who owns all this land out here?" Tobias wondered why a boy Zek's age would even ask such a question. He said, "The Lord. You reckon he would give us some of it? You've got it now. You can roam it wherever you please. The Lord put it here for everybody. But what if somebody else comes here besides us with a herd? How could we keep the cows apart? It's big enough for everyone. There ain't enough cows and people in the whole world to fill it up." Zek then said, "Skillet told me that the place where he was a slave was owned by a man. He owned all the land, and nobody else couldn't come on it. If we owned the land, we could put a fence around it, like the pen we built. And then we wouldn't have to follow the cows. We could just turn them loose because they couldn't get out."
"That's foolish boy talk," Tobias said. "Nobody will ever fence this land. There's too much of it. This right here ain't a drop in the bucket. There ain't no man ever seen all of it. The Lord put it here for everyone to use."
Emma was listening. She said, "Somebody might own it someday, Tobias. All the land in Georgia is owned. You know that.
A man would have to be a fool to buy something he can use for nothing," Tobias replied. "This ain't Georgia. There they farm the land. Here they don't.
This land ain't worth nothing except to graze cows. The whole place is wilderness. Georgia ain't.
Tobias then changed the subject. Speaking of cows, it's about time I found out what to do with the ones we got. I figure we're probably out to the west of Fort Pierce by now. In the morning, I'm going to ride over to the east and find it. Somebody there will know about the market.
Will it be gone long? Emma asked.
Not more than a day and a night. It couldn't be far to the coast, but I got to find out where we can sell the cows.
If you find lard, buy some. We don't have any more, and I can't make biscuits without it.
There were orange groves on the outskirts, and a dirt road ran past them and into the village of Fort Pierce. There was no activity on the sultry streets as Tobias walked the horse slowly, going past a dock where a coastal schooner was being loaded, then coming to a barn-like building with a sign, General Merchandise. After tying his horse to a rail, he went inside. The store was deserted, except for a man sitting beside the counter, swatting flies with a matted palm fan. He said to Tobias,
"Flies get bad this time of year. Skeeters, too. Sometimes I wish they'd go after each other."
"You got lard?" Tobias asked.
"How much you want?"
"A bucket." The man went behind the counter and brought out a 1-gallon can.
25 cents, be anything else?"
"You got a Dutch oven?"
"Nope, but I got some frying pans."
"I got a frying pan." Tobias sniffed the air. "Is that coffee I smell?"
"Sure is. Just ground a fresh batch. It came in on the schooner yesterday."
"How much is it?"
"$1 for a 5-pound bag."
"I'll take it. And a coffee pot, too, if you got one."
The man went to a shelf and returned with a tin coffee pot.
$1.50 for both."
As Tobias was counting out the money, he said,
"What'd they do with them oranges I seen coming here?"
"Ship 'em up north on the schooner. And some goes up the inland waterway to Jacksonville on them little boats."
"How much they sell for?"
"Bring 'em 5 cents, 100-pound weight right now. Man can make a good living with oranges. In a good season, you can clear up to $3 a tree. And they're going to be worth more than that. It's a smart move to plant a grove."
"I just might do that."
The man put all of Tobias's purchases into a brown paper sack.
"Anything else now?"
"Just some information. You know anything about selling cattle?"
"Right smart. A man in my business has to keep up with things. What you want to know?"
"Where to sell them."
"You got a herd?"
"Yes, out on the prairie, west of here."
"Well, there ain't no market for cows in Fort Pierce except a few at a time to the butcher shop. If you sell them out there on the prairie, you'll get about $4 a head, tops. Best place to sell now is over on the west coast. The Cuba trade is getting real good again. You take them over there to a shipping point, you'll get at least $12 a head, maybe more."
"Where over there?"
"Best place is Punta Rasa. And they're shipping out of Tampa, too."
"Where's Punta Rasa?"
"Down south of Fort Myers."
"Where's Fort Myers?"
The man gave Tobias a penetrating look.
"I tell you what you ought to do, fella. You got a herd, point it straight west. When you come to a big body of water, that'll be the Gulf of Mexico. You can turn right or left. If you turn right, sooner or later you'll come to Tampa, unless you go past it and end up in Pensacola. If you turn left, you'll come to Fort Myers or Punta Rasa. If you miss both of them, you're headed for Key West, but it's a long swim down there."
Tobias picked up the sack and said, "I thank you for the information." Then he walked out. During the ride back to join the herd, his mind was calculating figures. $4 a head for 148 cows was more money than he had ever seen or hoped to see. With that, he could buy Emma a wood stove instead of a Dutch oven, and many other things, too. But $12 a head boggled his imagination and was beyond comprehension. And all that additional money just to drive the cattle over to a place called Punta Rasa, a thing he and Zek and Skillet could do easily. He could see visions of some day soon hiring drovers and moving herds 10 times as large as his present one, masses of cows all cutting a trail to Punta Rasa. When he found the herd, it was late afternoon, and they had already made camp for the night. Emma was by a fire cooking supper, and Zek and Skillet were out with the cows. Tobias tied the horse to a wagon wheel as Emma said, "Did you get the information you wanted?"
"Sure did, and the lard, too." He took the can from the sack and handed it to her.
"That's good. I'll make biscuits for supper. I know Zek and Skillet are hungry."
"There's more, too," Tobias said teasingly. "Turn your head and close your eyes."
When he put the sack beneath her nose, she sniffed and then cried, "Coffee! You got coffee! And a pot to make it in." "I'll go now and fill it with water," she said eagerly. "Then you can sit and watch as it boils. I bet the smell will bring Skillet in. Zek won't know what it is."
As soon as the pot was bubbling, Tobias poured a tin cup of the steaming liquid and sipped slowly. "Coffee and biscuits at the same time," he moaned. "It's been a long time, Emma."
Zek and Skillet rode in and tied their horses, and Skillet said immediately,
"Do I smell what I think I smell?"
"What you think you smell?" Tobias asked.
"Coffee?"
"Sure is, and it's ready now. Pour out a cup."
Skillet picked up the pot and said, "A voice been telling me all day something good was going to happen to old Skillet, and now it's come to pass. Praise the Lord."
Emma turned from the cooking pot and said, "What did you find out about the cattle, Tobias? With all the excitement about the coffee, I forgot to ask."
"How would you like to see a place called Punta Rasa?"
"Where's that?"
Zek asked. "Over on the west coast, clear across the state. They're buying cows there now for Cuba at $12 a head. As soon as our cows hit about 500 pounds each, we're heading west. I figure it ought not to be more than 3 weeks, maybe less."
"Punta Rasa," Emma repeated. "That's a pretty name. Does it mean anything?"
"It means $12 a cow, and we got 148 of them. I can't even figure that high."
"I'll go out there and make them old cows eat faster," Zek said. "I want to go now. How far is it, Papa?"
"Don't know, but it's over there. All we got to do is head west."
Chapter 14. It was mid-afternoon in the middle of the next week when the sky in the east turned solid black. Clouds boiled like smoke and inched upward, blocking out more and more blue, and an increasing wind rattled the fronds of cabbage palms and shook the palmetto clumps. Streaks of lightning flashed downward and then turned horizontal, forming fingers that ran crazily for a moment and disappeared into the earth. The boom of thunder broke the stillness of the prairie and caused great flights of egrets to rise upward and move away to the west. Tobias rode up to the wagon and said to Skillet,
"Must be a storm coming from out over the ocean. Looks to be a good one. This thunder keeps up the cows as liable to run in four directions all at the same time."
"You want me to unhitch from the wagon and ride herd with you and Zek?"
"You best do that till we see what this storm is going to do. We might need your help. Are you all right, Emma?"
"I'm fine. I'll stay with the wagon till it blows past. Then we can make camp and have supper."
Soon the sky overhead was black, too, and the winds increased to a steady howl, bending the prairie grass flat against the ground and filling the air with dead fronds from palm trees. Skillet rode up to Tobias and said,
"Just look at that, Mr. Tobias. I ain't never seen anything like it, and I sure don't like the looks of it."
Droves of small animals, foxes, rabbits, raccoons, were running together, enemies no longer, moving rapidly westward. And deer bounded across the land, leaping bushes as they rushed past the smaller animals and disappeared. They rode around and around the herd, trying to hold in the frightened cattle, and even the horses became skittish and whinnied nervously. Nip and Tuck worked full speed as they went after cow that broke free and tried to run away. The first pelts of wind-driven rain stung like bees as they slashed into Tobias's face. All light was vanishing rapidly, giving the prairie the yellowish look of late sundown. Tobias turned one cow with his whip as Skillet galloped up to him and said,
"What are we going to do, Mr. Tobias? We can't hold the cows no longer. There just ain't no way we can do it."
"We gotta try," Tobias said. "They'll be ready to start to Punta Rasa by next week. If they run now, as scared as they are, they'll be scattered all over hell and back come morning. Tell Zek to go and see to Emma. Me and you and the dogs will try."
As Skillet rode off, the rain came in a blinding sheet, obscuring cows, hammocks, and sky.
Tobias rode back in the direction of the wagon, groping slowly, feeling the wind knock the horse sideways and cause it to stumble. When he finally found the wagon, both Skillet and Zek were there. The dogs were tied to a wheel and were huddled beneath the wagon floor, whimpering. The tarpaulin top popped constantly, sounding louder than cracking whips. Skillet came close to Tobias and said, "This marsh is the lowest land we've been on since we started to drive. There ain't no place for the water to run off. If it keeps on raining like this, the whole place is going to turn to a lake."
"I know," Tobias agreed. "But we can't turn back now. It's too late. It's 10 miles back to higher ground, and we'd never make it."
Skillet pointed south and said, "Yesterday afternoon when I scouted ahead, I seen an Indian mound right over yonder. We go there, we be out of the water. It's only a mile. We can look for the cows tomorrow."
"Hitch Ishmael to the wagon, too, and we'll make a run for it. You take my horse and lead the way. I'll throw the dogs in there with Emma and Zek."
Both horses strained to their limit as the wagon inched slowly across the soggy ground. Wind gusts hitting the tarp almost turned the wagon over before they took it off. Then all protection for Emma and Zek was gone. The mound loomed above them just before they became engulfed in total darkness. A few minutes more, and it would have blended black into black and become impossible to find. They tried to drive the wagon up the slope, but the horses slipped and fell backward. Finally, they unhitched them and led them upward to the flat top. The mound was 50 feet across and covered with dwarf cypress. They tied the horses and dogs and then huddled together, linking their arms and bracing themselves against the runty trees. By now, the rain was not rain, but solid water, tons of wind-driven water that felt like a river rushing over them. It poured into their eyes and noses, almost suffocating them, causing them to gasp for breath and hold their hands against their faces in hope of relief. The storm raged unabated for 8 hours. 3 hours before dawn, it returned from solid water to a torrential downpour. When a faint light finally broke the darkness, the rain still came down with such force as to limit vision to less than 50 yards. Tobias felt around him and touched flesh. Then he said, "Emma, are you all right, Emma? Zek? Skillet, is everybody here?" He opened his eyes, but his sight was blurred by the night of pounding water. Emma said feebly,
"I'm not sure. I've never been so soaked. I feel like my skin is washed off." "I'm fine, Papa," Zek said. "But I need to check on Ishmael. I hope he ain't floated off."
Skillet stirred and said, "I knows now how it feels to be a old catfish. That storm must have went right up the coast. If we'd been in the center of it, it would have blowed us off here like leaves."
"It was bad enough," Tobias said, pushing himself to his feet. He walked to the edge of the mound and looked downward, seeing solid water. Only the tip of the wagon seat was visible. In another hour, the rain slackened to a drizzle, and they all looked out over a vast lake stretching as far as they could see. The water had come 8 feet up the side of the mound. Emma said,
"The wagon, Tobias. Everything in it is gone. It's all ruined. The salt and the flour and the coffee and the lard, everything."
"The cows, too," Tobias said. "Ain't no way they could have got out of that alive. They done all ended up as buzzard meat."
"Maybe the Lord didn't mean for us to own them," Emma said, brushing her eyes. "Maybe he means for them to be wild and free like the deer and the birds."
"This ain't the Lord's doing," Tobias said. "It was only a storm. We'll start again, but I'm damned if I'll spend another year popping cows out of swamps one at a time. This time we'll find a better way to do it."
"The horses is okay, Papa," Zek said, "and the dogs, too. But they seem to be powerful hungry."
"We're all going to be hungry before we get out of this. Our bellies has rumbled before, and we got through it, and we'll do it again. As soon as the water goes down, we'll start out of here. It's going to take more than a storm to keep me from Punta Raza. And that's the God's truth, so help me. We're going to see Punta Raza."
Tobias then turned to Skillet and said,
"Are you still with us, Skillet?
You want to try again, or have you had enough by now?
I ain't going nowhere but with you, Mr. Tobias. This is the onliest family I ever had, and ain't no storm going to take it away from me. I'm ready whenever you are.
Chapter 15. Spring, 1868. Tobias stood by the corral gate, listening to the popping of whips far in the distance. Then came a faint sound, like the drone of bees, and he felt a trembling in the ground. He watched intensely as the tiny black specks grew larger and formed a small herd of cows thundering straight toward them. When he could see their horns point upward, he opened the gate and moved off hurriedly to the side of the corral. Zek turned at the last possible moment and just missed crashing headlong into the rails. Then Ishmael started bucking and kicking, as if to show the cows who had won the race. Nip and Tuck ran around in circles, and then they plopped to the ground, panting. Tobias came back and closed the gate. Zek and Skillet calmed their horses and dismounted. Skillet said, "Mr. Zek, you don't quit running that little horse flat out like that. You're going to go right over a cow's back one of these days."
"He wasn't wide open," Zek said. "I let him go, he'd be a mile out in front of the cows. He just likes to run in real close and bite their hind legs like Nip and Tuck."
Tobias was busy counting. He said, "It sure beats one-on-one in the swamp. Must be over 30 in that bunch. It pains me just to think about how we used to spend a whole day trying to catch one cow, and then most likely he'd get away. We got all we can handle now. Soon as this bunch is marked, we'll round up the whole herd and pen them for a final count, then we'll get started."
"How long you figured take us to drive all them cows to Punta Raza?"
Skillet asked.
"Don't rightly know. But we'll do it like we done with the herd we lost. Go real slow and let them graze on the way. Time we get there, they ought to be fattened up and in good shape."
"Well, I sure hope we make it there this time. I get a little something to spend. I needs a new pair of britches real bad. These I got about to fall apart. They done got patches on patches, and they ain't nothing more Mrs. Emma can do for them. And they's something else I need to see about, too."
"What's that?" Tobias asked, mildly curious.
"Best not say," Skillet replied, grinning. "They might not have none, so it best I wait and see."
"What I want is a pair of boots," Tobias said. "We sell the cows, everybody gets boots, and a Dutch oven for Emma. Or maybe one of them spank new wood cook stoves. She ain't never had one of them. What you want, Zek?"
Zek thought for a moment, and then he said, "A sack of apples for me and Ishmael. You reckon they got apples over there, Papa?"
"I reckon. But is that all you want?"
"Well, maybe a brush, too. Then I could brush Ishmael down and make him look real shiny. He's never had a chance to look his best, and I know it would feel good to him."
"We'll do it," Tobias said, slapping Zek on the shoulder. "We'll get it all. Britches, boots, oven, apples and brushes. And maybe whatever else it is that Skillet's got in mind. But right now we'd best stop spending money we ain't got and get on with the branding. And we got a few calves with this bunch. We need to get them back to the right mammy so they can suck."
"Let's get them cows marked and them calves mammied up," Skillet shouted enthusiastically. "These old britches might not hold up till we gets to Punta Raza. Then I'd be in a worse fix than what the old gator done to me. I'd have to stay hid in the woods and miss all the fun, and I sure wouldn't like that."
When they reached the homestead later that afternoon, Zek and Skillet took a bundle of raccoon hides down to the river to hail one of the boats. Another sternwheeler had been put into service, the Osceola, and they had sold the boatmen enough venison and hides to purchase supplies for the trip to Punta Raza. Emma was at the cooking pot when Tobias came inside and sat at the table. He said to her, "You figure we got enough of everything to make the trip? We done branded the last bunch, so we'll be ready to leave soon."
"We can make do. You'll have to shoot meat along the way. It's getting too hot to carry along much meat, even if it's smoked. How long have the supplies got to last?"
"A few weeks. That time I helped drive the cows for the Confederates, we went a far piece in 2 weeks, and this ought not to be much further."
Emma put down the spoon and sat at the table.
"That's what worries me, Tobias. When you went on that drive, you were with men who had been there before.
They knew where they were going and how long it would take. Now you don't. And there were a lot more men. Zek's not a man, Tobias. I know he tries to act like one instead of a boy, but he is a boy. It's really just you and Skillet. Tobias remained silent for a moment, and then he said, "You're right, Emma, and I know it. It worries me, too. We got over 700 cows, and that's more than we herded for the army with 7 men. Lord, what would the 3 of us do if we'd run into something like that pack of wolves? But I don't know what else to do. We just got to sell the cows. It's our only chance."
"Why don't you find some help? There must be a lot of men somewhere who need work. Didn't Mr. Thompson tell you there's men everywhere who are hungry and looking for anything to do? You could try to get help up at Kissimmee. That's the closest place."
"He did say that. But I ain't got no money to pay drovers, and nobody works for free."
"Pay them at the end of the drive. That would make them want to get the herd there as much as you. If we lose the herd with just the 3 of you, we end up with nothing again. Seems to me that paying a few wages is better than risking nothing at all."
Tobias smiled. "You know, Emma, you got a heap more sense than me. This family would fall apart without you. It just might work. I can promise to pay them when I sell the cattle and feed them along the way. If a man's hungry enough, he'll go for it. It's worth a try." Emma was pleased that he agreed.
"I just fear for the 3 of you trying it alone. Zek would kill himself for you if need be, but he's still just a boy."
"I'll go to Kissimmee at daybreak tomorrow. I ain't never been there, but I can find it. All I got to do is follow the river, and as soon as I come back with some help, we'll be on our way." He took her hands in his and said, "You're the only MacIvy with brains, Emma. Except Zek. Just you and Zek. Me, I'm a dumb old coot and I know it. I'm as dumb as that army horse, running in a straight line, full speed ahead without looking where I'm going. It could get me busted wide open, and all of you, too."
"That ain't so, Tobias," she said gently. "Hadn't been for you, we'd still be up in Georgia, probably starved by now. Wouldn't many men strike out like you did. And like you always say, we're going to make it, somehow. Now you just go on and look for them drovers."
Tobias followed the river hammocks until he came to Lake Kissimmee. Here he skirted the east shore and then headed through a marsh area, soon coming to 2 more lakes. Late in the afternoon, he met a family traveling south by ox cart, and they told him it was just a few more miles into the village. He decided to make camp for the night and continue at daybreak. The next morning, he ate a sparse breakfast of smoked beef and a biscuit, saving most of his food for the drovers on the return trip. Then, after a short ride, he approached Kissimmee along a dirt road deeply embedded by cows' hooves. The main street extended for 2 blocks and was lined with unpainted, clapboard buildings containing 2 general stores, a small cafe, a blacksmith shop, and 3 saloons. Wooden benches bordered the sidewalk in front of each store, and vacant lots separating the buildings were overgrown with weeds. Tobias first rode all the way through town and into the residential section, containing 6 frame houses with small front porches and drawn window shades. A dog ran from 1 yard and barked as he passed, and in another, chickens pecked at the bare ground. This was the most houses he had seen in years, and he observed carefully the details of each, comparing them with his own homemade cabin. When he came back into the business section, loud curses were coming from one of the saloons. He watched curiously as a lone rider rode up to a window cut into the side of the building, was handed a filled glass in exchange for a coin, drank it in 1 gulp, and sauntered off, never dismounting his horse. Just then a man crashed through the swinging doors and landed flat on his back in the street. He got up painfully, brushed dirt from his pants, then walked down to one of the stores and sat on a bench. Tobias rode by slowly, studying the man out of the corner of his eye. He was around 30, 6 feet tall and thin as a cypress pole, with a bushy black beard. On top of his head was a huge black felt hat covered with dust. He stared dejectedly at the ground and paid no heed as the horse passed.
At the next store, Tobias dismounted, tied his horse to a rail, and walked back to the man. He hesitated for a moment, not knowing how to make the approach, and then he said bluntly, "You're looking for work?" The man glanced up.
"Doing what?"
"Brush popping."
"What's that?"
"Working cows. Herding."
"What do it pay?"
50 cents a day plus keep. "But I can't pay till I sell the cows. You got a horse?"
"Piece of one. I rode him in the army."
"Which army?"
"Reb. Do I smell like a friggin' Federal?"
"Nope. More like a skunk. When's the last time you went down to a creek and washed?"
"Don't rightly remember. Must have been sometime back in 65.
Tobias shifted his feet and said, "You want the job or not, I got a herd to move to Punta Rasa, and I ain't got time to stand here jawing with you."
"One thing for sure, I ain't had a dollar on me in over 3 years, and I've et so many possums I feel like I could hang by my tail from a tree limb. When do I start?"
"I'm riding out of here just as soon as I can. I'm Tobias McIvey. What's your name?"
"Frog."
"Frog? Frog what?"
"Just Frog. That's all the name I need. I got a buddy down the street. Can he go too?"
"Yes, I need two drovers. What's his name?"
"Bonzo."
"Lordy me," Tobias said, shaking his head. "Frog and Bonzo. This is going to be some cattle crew. Go and tell him we'll leave from right here in a half hour. And both of you better be on time."
"Could I have 50 cents in advance?"
Frog asked. "What for?"
"I done been throwed out of every saloon betwixt here in Tallahassee, and I'd like to just one time have a drink and pay cash for it. That way I wouldn't end up flat on my back in the street."
"Hell no," Tobias replied harshly. "I ain't paying my hard-earned money to put whiskey in your gut. Now you go on and fetch your buddy back here."
"It was just a thought," Frog said, turning and walking away.
Tobias went into the store and said to the clerk, "You got cheese? How much you want?" 2 1-pound blocks, and wrapped them separate. The clerk cut 2 chunks from a hoop, wrapped them, and handed them to Tobias. "Now what else?" "Can you make a sign?"
"What kind of a sign?"
"A small one, about 3 feet long."
"Sure, we got stencils."
"How long will it take and how much will it cost?"
75 cents, counting the board. It won't take but a couple of minutes, but you'll have to be careful with it till the paint dries. What you wanted to say?"
"McIvey Cattle Company."
"How you spell that name?"
M-A-C-I-V-E-Y. The clerk said,
"Why don't you just write it all down for me on this piece of paper and I'll copy it?"
"If I could write it all down, I'd make the sign myself," Tobias said impatiently.
"I can count cows and money, but I ain't no good at writing. And besides, that's what I'm paying you for."
"Very well, it won't take but a minute."
As the clerk went to the back of the store, Tobias said, "Punch 2 holes in the top of the board so I can tie it to the side of a wagon." While waiting, he walked around the store, looking at the sparsely stocked shelves, thinking that goods here were not much more plentiful than at Fort Capron. But the emphasis here seemed to be on things needed by cattlemen. On one counter he found a basket of pink ribbons, and when the clerk came back he said, "How much are these?"
5 cents each. Pretty, ain't they? We got them in about a month ago, but don't have much call for ribbons. Mostly men in these parts."
"I'll take one."
"You got a Dutch oven?"
"That I don't have."
"How much I owe?"
"Altogether it comes to $1.25. Tobias paid the bill and picked up the sign carefully so as not to smear it. He said, "Much obliged," and started out. The clerk called after him, "Don't touch the paint for an hour. It ought to be dry by then." Frog and Bonzo were standing in the street, holding their horses, when Tobias came from the store. He did a double take when he saw Bonzo. Then he said,
"You two look like twin brothers. You must be cut from the same mold."
"We ain't," Frog said. "It just appears that way. I ain't no kin to this varmint." Tobias scratched his head.
"I thought I looked like a cattail stalk, but you two are worse than me. You look like you need worming. When's the last time you ate?"
"Can't say for sure," Frog said, "but right now I could eat a cut off a saddle."
"Here, take this," Tobias said, handing each of them a package. "I bought it for you."
He watched as they opened the cheese and ate eagerly. Then he said, "My wife's a good cook. Her name's Emma. She can make a polecat taste like ham. She'll put some meat on them bones. I got smoked beef and biscuits in the saddlebag. We'll have that for supper."
How long it going to take to get where we're going?
Bonzo asked, stuffing his mouth. We'll be there in the morning. Best we take it easy on the way. Them horses you got looks like they'd faint dead away if you put them in a trot. Bones stick out worse than on you. What they need is some good prairie grass. Let's mount up and go as soon as I've finished tying this sign to my saddle. You can eat on the way. Tobias secured the board. Then they mounted and rode down the dirt street. He wondered what Emma, Zek, and Skillet would do when they saw Frog and Bonzo come riding out of the woods. He felt sure that Nip and Tuck would put them up a tree. Frog said, "Mr. McIvey, don't you worry none about these horses. They old and skinny, but they tough. And me and Bonzo might look like rotten bean poles, but we're like these old nags. We knows how to hang in there, and we thank you for the cheese. You're the first one who just up and give us something besides a hard time." "Just hope you enjoyed it," Tobias said. "It might stop up your innards, but it'll fill your belly for a while. We got some riding to do afore dark and the next meal." They had ridden but 3 miles out of town when 2 men on horses came at them from both sides of the trail. Both were drunk, and each held a rifle. One of the men said, "Just hold up there a minute, fellas. I ain't never seen nothing like the three of you. Looks like 3 scarecrows in a pumpkin patch. What you think we ought to do, Con?" The other man said, "Make him buck dance. They look like skeletons on a string. You fellas know how to dance?" Tobias looked at the rifle pointing at him and said, "I've never done much of it, but I guess I could if I had to." He could see they were drunk and wanted to humor them, hoping they would soon tire of this and ride away.
"Okay, fellas, get down off them horses, and let's see what you can do."
The three dismounted and started shuffling their feet up and down, bucking around in circles. Little puffs of dust came from the ground as sweat beaded on their foreheads. One man finally said,
"You can take a rest now. That ain't bad. I've seen a heap worse. You fellas could make a good living dancing in the saloons. Or maybe a circus."
Both men then fell into fits of laughter. Frog said,
"That got me kind of hot. Would you fellas care to join us in some refreshments? I got a bottle in my saddlebag."
"I could sure use a snort," one man said. "That's right neighborly of you."
Frog reached in the saddlebag and pulled out an army pistol with a 2-foot barrel. He pointed it upward and said,
"Just put them rifles back in the holsters and come on down off there."
One man stared at the size of the pistol, and then he said,
"Ah, come on, fella, we were just funning. We didn't mean nothing by it.
If you ain't off them horses in 2 seconds, I'm going to blow your brains slam back to Kissimmee."
As the men dismounted, Tobias said, "Let it go, Frog. They're just drunk. It ain't worth trouble. Let's ride on away from here. We got a herd to move."
"Ain't no trouble," Frog said. "Maybe I can sober him up a bit. I've seen bastards like them all my life. They wasn't funning. They meant it. Next thing they do is ride off with everything we got, including the horses."
One man said, "What you going to do?"
"Well, first thing, take off them boots. Then all your clothes. Soon as that's done, we'll see."
Tobias watched curiously as the men removed their boots and clothes, wondering what Frog would do next. Frog then said,
"Now put the boots back on. A man needs his boots."
When this was done, he said,
"You fellas ever seen a frog jump?" "Yeah, we seen it. What I want is for you to get down on all fours, then hop like a frog from here to that tree over yonder and back. You think you can do it?"
Both men started hopping, and then Frog said,
"Now ain't that a sight? 2 buck-naked grown men jumping around like frogs. Maybe we ought to take him back to Kissimmee so as everybody can see. They must be tetched, don't you think, Bonzo?"
"They's tetched for sure, and I ain't never seen such shiny butts in all my life. Looks like 2 big buckets of lard."
When the men came back to the horses, Frog said,
"Tell you what I'm going to do, fellas. I'm going to take your horses 5 miles down the trail and tie them to a bush. The guns will be in the holsters. I ain't got no use for them. But I sure like the clothes. I'll just take them along with me."
"Ah, hell, fella," one of the men snapped. "Ain't you done enough? How are we going to get back into town like this?"
"That's your problem. Why don't you buck dance into town? Whatever you do will be fine with me, so we'll just ride on now and leave you to your pleasure. It was real nice making your acquaintance."
Frog mounted and took the 2 horses in tow. As they rode away, Tobias said, "You left them in a bad fix, didn't you?
I ain't really going to keep their clothes. I'll leave them with the horses, but it'll sure give them something to study on for a while. I don't think they'll want to see no more buck dancing again anytime soon." Tobias grinned as he pictured again the naked men hopping over the ground.